Joshua is with us, I know I can quote from the Bible and at least somebody will understand. Therein it is stated, to honor thy father and mother so that everything will go well in your life in the land that the Lord has provided for you. It's a very simple verse, but the significance and the ramifications are profound. For those of you who tend to go to sleep when we discuss theology, there's certain factors that might wake you up, such as, what does it mean to be a man? What does it mean to be a father? Unlike Matthew's, men seem to have a code of silence regarding their identity. And that can lead to all kinds of complications, including midlife crisis, which we see in the heart, in the life of Brahma, as integral to his Brahma Vimohan Lila. Some families are confused, that thinking that to honor thy father and mother means you have to do everything they want.
Can you speak a little bit louder? Also come closer.
To honor means to care for the legacy of the forefathers and cultivate your own tendency for stewardship, to care for the gifts and sacrifices of others, who the fruit of which we're enjoying ourselves. And honoring mother and father can break the spell of complacency or taking things for granted, which has serious ramifications in our relationship with the Holy Name. Ainanda Tanudakinkaram, Lord Gauranga is calling out to the Holy Name. Lord Krishna, you're so gracious. You have bestowed upon me such a precious treasure in the form of the Holy Name. But I am so unfortunate, I have no attraction for him. That is the greatest misfortune, taking for granted the gift of the touchstone of the Holy Name. In regular cultural, religious, spiritual rituals of offering gratitude to the different, various worthy recipients, it keeps us aware of what our possibilities hold in life. Both Eastern and Western scripture have their archetypal original father, which in the Bible is an allegory, where Adam was awarded the service of naming all the animals. And it appears from the progression of the story that as he was naming the animals, he began to wonder, well, who and what am I? Because naming in scripture, it's a it means offering a thoughtful name which conveys a person's identity and holds the essence of the person. And it was considered such a special event, as we see in the samskaras, of the East, name-giving ceremony, that anyone undergoing a major spiritual transformation or revelation is likely to be given a new name to commemorate the event. So in naming the animals, Adam began to wonder, what kind of animal am I? And when the Lord looked upon his creation, you know, through the 7-day period, beginning with the sacramental words, let there be light, which themselves were illuminating, and then God saw that everything was good. The day, the night, the earth, the land, the sky, the birds and the beasts. There was only one thing that was not good. Josh, what was that? That man was alone.
Oh, I need a
woman. He said, this is not good. So he rectified the situation in the Garden of Innocence, known as Eden. Srila Prabhupada cites Sanatana Goswami as the perfection of spiritual integrity and perfection, through which he's demonstrating a humility of a Vaishnava to speak in a way that we can relate to, asking the essential questions, who am I? Why am I here? What is my purpose? And what is the nature of my essence? Men tend to distance themselves from these feelings due to excessive identity with the role of protector and provider. And a fear of self-expression prevails. It's very damaging to relationships. And that's why men generally always have to be assisted by a woman. It doesn't have to be a wife. It could be a mother. It could be Mother Earth. In helping us...
What's damaging to the relationship?
What's that?
What is it damaging? I missed it. What is it damaging to the relationship?
On all levels it's damaging the relationships.
What?
The fear of self-expression, which you haven't experienced. That's why she asked the question. So, men need some kind of female influence, be it mother, wife, daughter, because... Mataji's help man in his relationship with nature, which includes his own body and the signals it's sending that men tend to disregard or suppress or deny. But the Mataji's will bring it to awareness one way or another. So men need women. Parents need children. And we need to talk. Men need to talk to their sons and daughters, and it's equally important that the sons and daughters speak to their father and tell their story. And in the loving exchange, a foundation of love and trust is forged that typically lasts a lifetime or more. The Vedic version traces the origin of man back to the actual only begotten Son of the Lord. Not to say that Jesus wasn't, but before that time was Rama, who was born from a lotus rising in a lake in the navel of Sri Vishnu. And you know the story from the Srimad Bhagavatam. He tried to trace out his origins following the lotus stem. But there was no end to that empiric attempt, so he returned to the lotus, sat in meditation, heard it tapa, performed tapasya, until the Lord appeared to him sequentially. First, Krishna, Srila Prabhupada's translation is, Krishna held hands with Brahma. It means he took him by the hand and revealed to him the spiritual world as the archetype for which to design, Brahma's function, to design the material world as a reflection with an inseparable relationship with her source. And that's why a relationship is so essential. So, and then Lord Brahma, he gave birth to Lord Shiva without the assistance of a wife from his forehead. He gave birth to Varaha without the assistance of a wife. Varaha, who married Mother Earth and begot one son together, Boma. But you know, in patriarchal religions or traditions, and there's nothing wrong with patriarchy, that's the way men naturally arrange themselves and is very healthy and uplifting. What's unnatural is when they dematriize the divine feminine and her various hues. So, through his series of darshans with various forms of the Lord, Brahma became very intrigued with the activities here on earth during the childhood play of Krishna and Gokul. And Brahma noticed that all these are not ordinary demons. These are the universal, most powerful rakshasas taking birth as demons and brudge to annihilate the Vrijabhasis by taking away Krishna. So their powers are inconceivable to mortal mind. So when Brahma is seeing the sequence of events and Krishna is liberating all these demons, along comes Arista, who simply by turning his gaze to the sky would frighten the demigods to hide in the clouds. But then Brahma noticed that Krishna dispatched him so effortlessly. He liberated him. And as the soul of Agha rose into the sky, Krishna met him there, and they had a conversation. Now remember, Agha is the embodiment of implacable cruelty and brutality. So how did Krishna, who's the Lord of Love, address the soul of Agha? He said, and Agha's body was 12 miles long, and his lips reached to the sky. But Krishna told him there wasn't enough space for our two souls to live in that body, so somebody had to go, and I prefer to be you. Now, that's very symbolic, because Krishna and envy cannot live in the same heart. One will have to leave. So Brahma is watching all this, and then he was reflecting on the pastimes in Braj, epitomized in Krishna's picnics with the gopas. Now this Brahmavamohan Lila is a chapter which is eliminated by Madhvacharya from his commentary, because he didn't know how to write commentary on Srimad Bhagavatam and comment on how our founder Acharya in ancient times, Lord Brahma, was bewildered. So he just skipped over that chapter in his commentary. So as Brahma is watching what's next after Krishna delivers Agha, well, the interruption of Agha made lunch late that day. So the gopas were especially hungry. And when gopas say we're hungry, what they mean is, Krishna, we want you to eat. But he knows that he's more responsive to them. So Srila Prabhupada beautifully portrays in Krishna book how the gopas would take out their different mats and their different lunch boxes prepared by their various mothers. And the pattern of loving exchanges amongst the gopas was like a lotus. Krishna in the center, surrounded by his eight intimate sakas, and them surrounded by their eight, and their eight, and their eight, expanding into, depending on how you calculate, it could be millions of gopas, each experiencing that Krishna is looking just at me. And it's not because I'm great, because everybody here is greater than me. But Krishna's magnanimity is so profound that he's exchanging with me alone. And then that makes them all the more humble. Seeing the splendor of nature, or even in the Bhagavatam, you know, the opulence of God's creation designed to inspire a sense of awe and reverence and a sense of how small and simultaneously special we all are. So Srila Prabhupada says this is a model for the Krishna consciousness movement, Krishna in the center, surrounded by lotus patterns of infinite souls, all experiencing simultaneously. He's interacting just with me because of the glory of his love. So, as Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur explains it, no, one more preceding. Brahma is watching the wonder of this picnic, but then he saw something that really bewildered him, which is the cause of the bewilderment of the whole chapter, Brahma Vimoha Lila. Brahma was seeing that every gopa, Krishna included, when he would taste his various preparations made by his mother, and if something was especially exquisite, he would offer it to Krishna after he already sampled it to see how good it was. Here, Krishna, taste this. And Krishna would eat it. And then Krishna would do the same. If he found some especially succulent item in Mother Jashoda's lunchbox prepared for him, he would take a bite and then offer to the gopas. So Brahma's watching. The prowess displayed by the child could only come from Lord Narayan. Is he some form of my Lord Narayan, my father? So he's watching. And when he sees Krishna eating the remnants of his gopa friends, he said, that's not Narayan. I mean, to steal Mahaprasad off the plate, that is breaking the rules and regulations. But to offer your own remnants to the deity is a different category altogether. And Brahma's watching this and seeing how Krishna and the gopas are just relishing this loving exchange, because Brahma Vimohan Lila also means the superiority of Madhurya over Aishwarya. Krishna's sweetness, love, and charm over his power, majesty, and glory. So that bewildered Brahma, because he didn't know the mellows of Vrindavan to this point. So then, Krishna's Lila Shakti, which is Vrindadevi in Braj, she had this yearning to fulfill a very deep desire of Krishna. So she asked, Krishna, do you want some amusement? Should I bring Lord Brahma to this picnic? So Brahma was drawn into the picnic in a very special kind of way, as you know from the Bhagavatam. And the reason he did it, he wanted to test, ultimately to test, could this be some form of my Lord Narayan? And that would be determined by Brahma's response, by Krishna's response to the disappearance of the calves. Brahma wanted to see, is he going to pray to me for assistance? Or is he going to become bewildered? Or is he going to do something wonderful like just duplicating them? And Brahma knew that whatever response it would be would lead to the answer to this question, is this some special form of my Lord Narayan? So when the calves disappeared, the gopas jumped up in alarm, but Krishna said, don't interrupt your lunch. Just you all go on enjoying. I'll go search for the calves. Then he took a big lump of Krishna's surprise just to, in his hand, which Brahma marveled at, just to assure everyone he wouldn't be hungry because that would disturb the mellows. And Krishna searched not only the forest, mountains, and caves, and the boys were hidden in the cave, but Krishna couldn't find that cave. And then Krishna did become bewildered. I cannot return alone to Braj. All the cows and mothers will be brokenhearted if their sons don't come back. So it was Yogamaya who hid the original calves, but it wasn't in the cave. It was right on the picnic ground. But they became invisible. Well, Mahamaya created duplicates to be hidden in the caves. And it was to fulfill Krishna's desire to please the cows and the mothers, and especially Brahma himself, with a very wonderful lila. So then, that night, we skipped a part. Krishna expanded himself as the calves and the gopas. And then Brahma's looking. They're still there. He looked back in the cave. They're still there. He looked back to Yamuna. They're still there. And he's thinking, how does he do that? Does he just duplicate the image everywhere I turn? Or did he make duplicates? So Brahma became bewildered. But then he saw that all the calves and gopas became forms of Lord Narayan. So Brahma's question, is this some form of my Lord Narayan? He saw this is the source of all the forms of my Lord Narayan. And there again, Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur explains that when Brahma is worshipping these calves and gopas in their Narayan form, they responded to him, revealing the calves' exquisite understanding of Sanskrit language. Because in Sanskrit, the word for goat is Aja, but the name for Brahma is Aja. It can mean unborn, it can mean goat. So these forms of Lord Narayan responded to Brahma's prayers, oh Brahma, you are verily a goat. But it wasn't insulting, it's all the sweetness of Braj and the innocence of that lila. So then, that night, when the calves and gopas returned, because they were expansions of Krishna, that night the cows gave more milk, and it was sweeter than nectar because it was infused with their prema because their new calves are Krishna. And the human mothers experienced the same dynamics with their sons. And Lord Balaram is watching that the affection for the ladies and their sons and the love of the calves toward their cows is expanding on par with my increasing affection for Krishna. Because Balaram wasn't present on the day of Brahma Vimohan Lila, because it never would have happened if he hadn't been there. He was home with his mother for his birthday party. That was necessary for this Leela. Balaram would never have allowed Brahma to steal the calves because he's a cowherd boy. So then the next day, or shortly thereafter, on the peak of Govardhan Hill, the cows, they were hobbled, so they couldn't just run freely. But when they saw their calves at the base of Govardhan, they became so overwhelmed with affection that even though they were hobbled, they began galloping down the hillside with tears flowing from their eyes and milk gushing from their udders. And the cowherd men were angry and frustrated because they just lost control of the whole herd. And then when they reached the bottom of the hill, the cows went to their elder calves who were already weaned, just ignoring their newborn calves. And the cowherd men were so angry when they saw their sons, their love just eclipsed any agitation. And Balaram's watching. And Balaram's beginning to understand there's some kind of Maya unfolding here. It's not my Maya. Is it Devi Maya or Rakshasa Maya? No, nobody could do that. It has to be Krishna's Maya. So he's becoming very attentive during this year. And this is also the year that little Krishna instructed Nanda Maharaj that this is the day that you should get all the gopis married. Because they wanted to marry Krishna. And they did. In the form of his expansions as the gopas. And then the calves got, you know, a calf as their partner. So everyone was increasingly more satisfied than ever before. So then, after a moment of his time, which is a year on earth, Brahma looked back to see what was happening. And they were and he saw that everything was unfolding. And he offered his prayers, which same prayers Lord Chaitanya's offering to Jarikanda Forest, which he saw as Vrindavan, the hills as Govardhan, the river as Jamuna. Vrindavan is the transcendental abode of the Lord. There's no hunger, anger, or thirst there in that abode where gentle animals live together with ferocious beasts as well as humans, all in transcendental friendship. And then he uttered his famous verse, Tatena Takamsa Samikshamano. My Lord, those who patiently await your grace while tolerating and enduring the results of their past karma, and all the while ever offering gratitude from their heart, expressed in their words, body, and mind, they are eligible for liberation because it's already their rightful claim. And the devas don't usually touch the ground, but Brahma fell in the dust at Krishna's lotus feet to purify his own tears. Because the price for Krishna is crying for Krishna. And Brahma is teaching us how to purify our tears. And then Krishna said something in response to Brahma that I would really request you pay attention, because the ramifications of this verse as we respond in our own lives are profound. Krishna told Brahma, normal people are grateful for a gift they receive which they consider to be of value or meaning. I'm different. I'm grateful for gifts and services that will be offered to me in the future. And I reciprocate in advance. This is the seed of the gratitude series, because gratitude has such a profound emotional impact because it opens the heart and allows love to both enter and go out to others. And that love from a devotee's heart can embrace our spiritual inheritance and feel its influence in our lives even before we've matured sufficiently to receive it. So while Brahma's offering all these eloquent and very significant prayers, Krishna's not responding. He's standing there wondering, who is this four-headed personality, and where did he come from, and what is he talking about? I don't understand any of this, and I don't have time for it because I need to find my friends. So, Brahma wanted to reside in Vrindavan forever, but Krishna didn't grant that because he did not want him to leave his post and let the universe fall into dysfunction. But there's something more to it. Brahma was so humbled and so contrite, feeling himself an offender for disturbing Krishna's picnic, and still yearning to attain Vrindavan. So, and then simultaneously, this is the time after the year that Krishna returned to the gopis, and they said, "You're back so fast." Nobody realized that a year had passed. But Brahma felt very contrite, very repentant, and he contemplated that my identity as the creator is useless, because that very ego has deprived me of the nectar of Brajras. If I could have been born as a gopa to serve the cows and the master of the gopis, my life would be perfect. But I am unable because of my identity. So then he prayed to Krishna to become a blade of grass in Braj, to be dusted by the lotus, by the Chintamani on the feet of the devotees. But then he thought, that's too arrogant. He prayed, let me take birth outside of Vrindavan so the pilgrims coming and leaving will bless me with the dust of their lotus feet. So Brahma was reflecting, since I was unable to attain Krishna Lila while he was here in this universe, when Lord Gauranga comes, I will not make the same mistake and I will rectify the situation. We're hearing the word heart coming up repeatedly today. And when Jiva Goswami began his Navadvipa Dham Parikrama and Lord Nityananda revealed that this is Antardvipa, he said, what's the meaning of Antardvipa? Antar means heart. And that's where Lord Brahma went, because the holy Dham is a lotus. In Navadvipa, the petals are Shravanam, Kirtanam, Vishnu, Smaranam, Padasevanam, Archanam, Vadanam, Dasyam, Sakyam, and the heart of the matter, the world, the lotus, is Atmanivedanam, surrender of the self. That is the resonance of the Lord where Nimai appears. So praying to Lord Gauranga in Navadvipa Dham, performing tapasya and fasting for a long, long time, finally Lord Gauranga appeared to him. And beholding the beauty of the golden avatar, Brahma fainted. Lord Chaitanya placed his foot on Brahma's head. Brahma came too, enlightened by that touch. And he prayed, I am a lowly, wretched fool controlled by pride, because myself and Lord Shiva And all the devas, we are your subjugated servants. We know that theoretically. And yet we're not so fortunate as your devotees of Vrindavan. I've wasted 100 trillion years of my life. This is called midlife crisis. What will happen in the next 100 trillion years? And as he lay there in the dust of Navadvip Dham, tears flowing from his eyes, Lord Gauranga responded that at the end of the next 100 trillion years of your life, you will attain shelter in Navadvip Dham, where I take all the devotees of all the previous acharyas and make them drunk with the nectar of Braj Ras. And then Lord Gauranga revealed his heart. Srimati Radharani's love is beyond my comprehension. Now theologically you would understand that is Radha is the Ashraya Vigraha, the shelter, whose container holds more volume than the object love, the Vishaya, Krishna. So when Krishna tries to understand Radha's love, his heart does not have the capacity. And the overflow covers the world in the form of Nam Sankirtan. What does Krishna do with the excess love beyond the love of Radha, beyond and above what he can articulate and assimilate? It overflows as Kirtan Ras and gives nourishment to every town and village of the world. The depth of our heart determines our capacity for love, and the Ashraya is greater than the Vigraha. Radha's love proved stronger than Krishna, and the testimony is the appearance of the golden avatar. So, contemplated Brahma's realizations and the wonderful assurance that Krishna imparted to him about the unlimited potency contained in the attitude of gratitude. If we can rise in gratitude to a level which embraces the future events of receiving our divine inheritance, then the emotional signature, what's the alternative synonym? Until you remember. The signature of gratitude draws feelings of that future event into our present three-dimensional experience. And then we come to know firsthand what is the meaning of providential grace. It is all by the mercy of our spiritual father, Srila Prabhupada. Now stewardship also, it means in addition to protecting and preserving the legacy of the father, you enhance it and enrich it with your own contribution. And always remain free of pride by this mantra, all glories to Sri Guru and Sri Gauranga. Thank you very much.
Impressions.
What's that?
Impressions.
Signature of things.
Thank you, Madhu. She's our English editor. But Paul makes it clear, Paul of Tarsus, the apostle, that we are obliged to be grateful in all things, though you don't have to be grateful for all things. There's a subtle distinction that makes all the difference in the world. Yes?
What's the significance of Brahma taking birth in the world of the lotus flower?
Would you repeat
She's asking, what is the significance of Brahma taking birth on the lotus seat? Because the lotus is the emblem of purity, rising from the depths of primordial water and always remaining aloof above it in a transcendental state. The lotus is a signature, a pattern that energies take in their impressions on the ether. And you see the physical dynamics in the Holy Dham, which blossoms and contracts like a lotus, according to Krishna's desire to please his devotees. If Krishna wants a certain journey, which is actually very short, to take a very long time, then Sri Dham expands. So a short journey becomes a very long one, allowing more time to experience all the lessons and wonders along the way. And if Krishna wants to create distance, like when a demon's coming, and they have to prepare, and there's no time, then the Dham expands, and even though that demon is galloping at the speed of the wind, it's taking him forever to go 8 miles. So Krishna has time to prepare everyone for the next wonderful event in the series of Braj Lila. Basically, a lotus is the emblem of purity and transcendence. And Brahma being the first founder acharya and original. Took birth from that essence.
But he was born in the center,
not in the bedroom. Well, it was an asan. So he sat in the center. Anything else?
Maharaj, since it's a Father's Day and father mostly looks after the discipline of the children, because I would like to say, like, how to discipline, to become more disciplined in our sadhana, in our, and especially to discipline the mind.
There's three items: practice, practice, practice. Of course, the essence is humility and dependence on the Lord's assistance. But there's 2 inches too short in Damodar Lila. One is our effort and His grace. So our effort is practice, practice, practice. But the inseparable connection is His divine grace, for which the child is very dependent. Okay? That's what sadhana means, practice. And the path back to home is a series of impressions of falling on your face and getting up and persisting until you're finally there. Anything else? Yes.
Question to do with the pastime. After the day of Brahma and the year and earth time, when Krishna reappeared in front of the gopas, did he have any Krishna surprise left so they wouldn't think that he was gone that long? Did he preserve some, do you think?
Whether he ate it or preserved it, it was still there.
Okay.
Because that was an example of sustainable
life.
Right.
So even though Krishna just took a handful, at the end of the year,
yeah,
although he'd been eating the whole time, it was still full.
So they wouldn't worry for him.
No. Yes? Well, it happens in every universe, but this, bear in mind, this universe is most special because our Brahma is a pure devotee. The Brahma of any universe is not necessarily a pure devotee. How would you like to live in a universe where the Brahma was a jnani, a speculator? Well, not a whimsical speculator, but yes, it is. So is Brahma, is Haridas Thakur Brahma, or is Brahma Haridas Thakur? Because that was the essence of that pastime in Antardvip. Brahma was praying for the humility to receive Krishna's grace. And Lord Gauranga told him, you will receive that by taking birth in a Muslim family, outcast, where you'll become famous for your chanting of the holy name. During your life, you will have my association. And after you leave, you will serve me eternally. He's telling Brahma, as Haridas Thakur. So is Haridas Thakur Brahma, or is Brahma Haridas Thakur? You can ponder that for a while. And the answer is yes. Well, you don't want to be a victim of circumstance. And until you have sufficient internal integrity that circumstances will not continue to control you and control your life and control your feelings and your emotions, you're to some degree a victim. It's when you claim independence by acknowledging, you know, the wholeness of the soul within your heart and not being dependent on environmental arrangements for our sense of security, stability, feeling a love for life. We shouldn't be dependent on external circumstances. We should develop these traits internally. So, there are evils in the world. Now, we don't equate an evil with an evil doer. But there is evil in the world. And I assume that certain activities can come to the minds of all of you that would qualify as evil, so that we don't have to speak the names of such atrocities. We're not grateful for those things. And a decent human being would do all he could to rectify the evils for which we're not grateful. But the person who's writing these letters on gratitude is in a prison ready to be beheaded for his faith, for his service. He's awaiting execution, writing to the... He was, you know, Paul of Tarsus was GBC of the whole Mediterranean area. I mean, from Israel to Greece to Turkey. So he's writing to his children, really. Be grateful in all things.
for the inherent grace in any situation, which, if you take as a challenge, will qualify you for that experience. But we're not grateful for abuse of any form, especially when inflicted upon another. That is not a Vaishnava attitude. But we're grateful in all things that Krishna's mercy is always accessible by the mere calling the sound of His holy name. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. And what happened in the pastimes of Haridas Thakur? A public execution by the whole assembly of Muslim executioners for his faith, for his love, for his chanting of the holy name. So with clubs and whips, and this was for the kill, this wasn't for punishment, and nobody had survived through two marketplaces. Most didn't survive the first marketplace because it's a public, disgraceful execution. They dragged him from one marketplace to another throughout all the 22 marketplaces of the town until the powerful executioners were exhausted. And they asked him, could it be that you are that peer, which means a Muslim saint that people say you are? Because while we're beating you with all our might, you are vacillating between joyful gratitude and sorrow for the reaction that we'll have to face. By this event, we've come to accept that you are that Muslim saint that people say you are. Problem is, if you don't die, then we will. We'll be executed for our failure to execute you by the government. So they weren't like testing him to accept one option. They were humbly inquiring, what do we do? He said, you don't have to do anything. And then he just reflected on those beautiful lotus feet of Krishna Gokul, and he fell not only unconscious, he fell into a state of samadhi where there was no life symptoms in his body. So the Qazi, the religious elite, ordered, because they wanted to bury him, he said, no, that's too high a privilege for this soul. Throw him in the river so his soul will ever wander aimlessly and not find peace. What they didn't know was Ganga Devi was yearning to serve him by carrying him back to Fulia. So they put him in the river. Ganga Devi returned him to Fulia, where he emerged from the Ganga the same way he went, chanting the holy name. So anyway, it was the Mahaprakash where the inner dynamics was revealed, and Lord Gauranga is calling all the devotees for 21 hours straight and revealing pastimes with them before they realized that he was the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So he's calling the devotees by name, but when he called Haridas, it was a different address. Oh my Haridas. And then he revealed, when those Muslim executioners were torturing you, you don't know that I appeared on the scene immediately with Sudarshan Chakra in my hand, ready to sever their heads. But then Sudarshan heard that you were praying for their deliverance, and he became impotent. I had to take matters in my own hands. I stood over you and took all the beatings on my own back. And when Lord Gauranga turned his back to his audience, they saw the whip marks and the club marks and the blood staining his chatra. And then Haridas Thakur just fell down and offered a series of prayers even more eloquent than he offered to Krishna in his form as Lord Brahma. So we're grateful in all things, knowing that Krishna's protection is just one call away. Not a phone call, a mantra. But we're never grateful for abuse, because what kind of stewards would we be if we had such indifference? Thank you. Anything else?
Maharaj, is there a deeper meaning why Srila Prabhupada left his body while translating Brahma Vimohan Lila?
Why did Srila Prabhupada write, when will that day come when I'm frolicking through the various pastures and meadows of Braj? An innocent, carefree cowherd boy, when will that day come? So while describing that Leela, which is his own ecstasy. Srila Prabhupada's purports are his own ecstasy. So when he's revealing his ecstasies and his purports, he literally entered into the Leela. Very significant. It's interesting because, you know, most of the acharyas are manjaris in their ontological form. Srila Prabhupada is clearly revealing sentiments of a gopa, and I'm not making any inference here. Because there are certain gopas who are so steeped in the moods of the gopis that the emotions interchange. But the fact that he left this world while immersed in that Leela is kind of reminiscent of the difference from my subjective experience being with Srila Prabhupada here and being with him elsewhere, as from the time when he was walking up Agashura Road and Kaliya came running up out of the pasture to greet him and then lead the procession. And when somebody asked Srila Prabhupada, do you know Kaliya? He said, well, I named her. She's my old friend. You know, to be with Srila Prabhupada in any situation or place is blessing, but to be with him here. And there again, it may just be my subjective experience, but it seemed to me he was really at home here. And he actually said that in different ways in different times. So it was always amazing to me, who grew up as a cowherd boy, to find that my guru was an aristocratic Bengali from the city. And how did he imbibe these moods of a cowherd boy? He brought it with him to distribute amongst us. That's not to say his ontological form is a cowherd boy, because he said, don't even try to figure it out. When we're qualified, he'll reveal it. But it's an interesting, a significant point of interest and charm that that was the apparent final pastime. Anything else?
You said about the self-expression. So, my question is about anger, Maharaj. I'm coming to realize that there is such thing as healthy anger. And
not only healthy, but proper.
And proper, and we, you know, all these emotions are there for a reason. So then, what would differentiate the healthy one from the unhealthy, which Bhagavad Gita...
Healthy is when you see abuse. When you see abuse, if you don't become angry, there's something wrong. Either your heart is cold or whatever. That is inappropriate if you don't become angry when you see wrongs and abuses.
and injustices. It's how you apply the anger. And Srila Prabhupada was a prime example of that because he could become angry. You know, Krishna says that the soul never ceases to exist, but your soul might want to cease to exist if you were in front of Srila Prabhupada when he was angry. I can testify. It wasn't directed at me, it was the person next to me. Anyway, he used it to make a point. And then as soon as he made the point, there was no residual effect. He used it as a tool to establish a principle, and that was done, because he couldn't do that without that anger. Theologically, that's divine indignation, which is appropriate. But the problem is fire easily gets out of control and crosses boundaries, as you see in samsara. So it's a powerful, useful, necessary emotion, but it has to be handled and controlled carefully, or it can burn down our own reputation and legacy and all the relationships in it. So you have to be careful. And since it seems to be a universal issue amongst most souls, you know, there's some basic, simple formulas that can really save you. First thing is lag time. Open the space between the action and reaction that you can choose an appropriate response rather than your conditional reaction. Because a conditional reaction is going to make it worse. A chosen response could dissipate and elevate the emotion. So first, create a space. Now, you know, it may be helpful to take a deep breath or two or three, and with your exhale, chant Krishna's names, and just compose yourself before you respond until you pass a certain exam. Is what you're going to say going to be helpful? Is it useful? And most of all, is it loving and kind? And if it passes your test, then express. And then let go. Because, you know, the Lord says, vengeance is mine, which means he'll settle the score in his own time if you don't get in the way. I mean, he'll do it anyway, but if you get in the way by impatience or overreaction of control, that'll delay the process. So be confident that, you know, he's gonna settle the score. It doesn't mean you're deprived of doing your part, but make sure it's appropriate. And most of all, what I always emphasize is be attentive to Krishna's response to your behavior in your character. And that'll really encourage you in the proper direction and help free you from the other.
What was the last sentence? That we're encouraging the right, are you free from the other? Okay.
Yes. And the effect of a chosen response is powerful. You know, especially in an anger-provoking situation, if you can display some composure, doesn't mean you don't get angry, it means it's controlled. Gets out of control, it'll burn you, but if it's controlled, it can purify the situation. Purify and rectify. As a child, long before Srila Prabhupada's shelter, I loved the pastime of Jesus when he came to the temple and found animals encaged for sacrifice, and he became angry. He tipped over all the tables, he let all the animals loose, and he took the ropes to bound them as whips to drive out the merchants. My Father's house is meant to be a prayer for all nations. You've turned it into a den of thieves. And he was driving them out. And as a child, when I heard that, he's my hero. So set free all the birds, released all the calves. And he was angry. But as soon as his point was made, he let it go. It was gone. And very effective. You could say that it cost him his life, because that was the main, one of the main items for the accusation to have him executed. But it's integrity. He could have escaped from Jerusalem altogether at the end. The disciples could have taken him back to Galilee to live happily ever after. And he prayed, you know, if this cup could pass from my hand, let it be. But make thy will and not mine be done. So there's a purpose to everything. And there be some reaction to anything. But if you act in integrity, then your intention and your goal will remain aligned. And you will be empowered in the process. So, chosen response over conditioned reaction will determine whether anger is healthy and proper or toxic and consuming. All right? I thank you all for your encouragement and kindness, and am grateful for the honor of being your servant. Thank you so much. Hare Krishna.